Okay. We have been, for the last few weeks, talking about looking at how Jesus dealt with different people under different circumstances. We were kind of looking at it from the standpoint of dealing with insiders and outsiders. Nicodemus being the insider, the woman of Samaria being the outsider, and looking at how, you know, the approach that Jesus took with each one was very different based on who they were and what their situation and circumstances were all about. And so we see Jesus, especially in dealing with the woman of Samaria, the woman at the well, we talked about the idea of him building this bridge that, you know, from where she was to him and reaching out rather than the real kind of blunt, upfront approach that he took with Nicodemus, Nicodemus being that religious insider, knowing, you know, what he should have done and how things should be and so forth. And Jesus was very abrupt with him in terms of just laying things out. And so one of the things that we're taking, hopefully, from this is that, again, we have to deal with people in different ways. Again, it's not just like a cookie-cutter approach. You can deal with everybody the same way. And so there are a lot of considerations that have to be made in terms of, you know, who am I dealing with? What's their situation? What's their circumstances? What do they know about God and about His Word and so forth? And, you know, what's going on in their lives and so forth? This story that we're going to be studying over the next few weeks is another example of Jesus meeting someone in the circumstance that they are in and how he is going to deal with this particular person. Okay? And you may find the way that Jesus deals with this particular person to be somewhat, take you back a little bit, okay? The real key to this whole story is really based on the question that Jesus asked this man. Do you want to get well? Okay? So keep that in mind as we go through this, and we're not going to really get into a tremendous amount of the particulars of this story this morning, because we've got some foundational things that we really need, I think, to understand. Let me begin by asking you this question. Let's talk about pity parties. Okay? Have you ever been to one? Ever thrown one? Yeah. Ever thrown a pity party of your own? See, I think that we all probably one time or another in our life have either held one ourselves or we've at least attended one that somebody else was throwing for themselves. We had a person come to church one time that really was a classic example of someone who was throwing a pity party, and that's where she was in her life at that time. And I remember when she first she ever talked to me, her conversation really centered about not only the problems that she was having in her life, but how terribly the church that she had just come from had treated her. Okay? And she was here for a little while, and a lot of people got, you know, involved with her, trying to help her out, and, you know, and all kinds of things. A lot of love was poured out her way, but none of that really seemed to help. She needed help with everything, whether it was physical help, financial help, emotional help. She needed it all. And she got a heavy dose of a lot of that. But when I sat down with her and crashed her pity party, she quit coming. The thing that I've kind of always wondered about was, what did she tell the next church that she went to about how terribly we treated her here? You see? And that's part of the nature of having a pity party. And I think, though, that what we have to understand is that we are all susceptible to the addicting drug of self-pity. Right?
I don't know that.
You never heard of a pity party? So you've been deprived of the opportunity to either have one, do what? You're schooling later. Well, you know, that's basically where somebody just feels sorry for themselves in their situation. And they want everybody just to kind of, you know, pour that pity on them and so forth. It's kind of a, oh, woe is me, you know. One person that I heard, you know, kind of defined it this way. It's the old, nobody likes me, everybody hates me, I'm going to go eat worms. You know, it's that, you know, life is terrible, life is miserable, what are my options kind of a thing. Everybody's down on me, life is down on me, woe is me, somebody please help me and take care of me and so forth. And as I said a moment ago, I think that all of us are susceptible to, and it really is, if you stop and think about it, it's an addicting drug, so to speak, of self-pity. We can find ourselves in that really, really easily. And usually, these, you know, pity parties come along during times of adversity in our lives. But it's usually some kind of an adversity that we're going through in our lives where we find a lot of kind friends who are very willing to jump in and help us out. That's kind of this pattern, and it may be that the crisis or the adversity may be some form of sickness, either a major sickness or minor sickness of some sort. It could be a crisis in their lives over the death of a loved one, or divorce, or major financial loss, or something of that nature. Whatever the adversity is, okay. The treatment is always the same. Right? Treatment is always the same. Well-meaning people treat us with pity. Okay? They hurt with us. They weep with us. They help us. They do all the things that, you know, we typically do when someone's struggling with something, help them overcome it. Most oftentimes, I think it's fair to say that the treatment is successful. Okay? So we're not knocking the treatment. Okay? When someone is struggling, when someone is facing some kind of adversity in their life or crisis or what have you, all of those kinds of things I just mentioned, they're the kinds of things that we're supposed to do, aren't they? And that we should do as people who care about one another. Yeah. Right? Everybody agree with that? Mm-hmm. Okay. So what's the problem? Well, I think that as I said, most of the time the treatment brings the intended results. And we, you know, the person finds encouragement, you know, they're able to work through whatever the adversity is and are able to pick up and move on with life. And that's really what I think the intended goal is of helping someone with the struggles and the adversity and the problems that they have. Yes?
That's true. It's like the
And that's really the goal, isn't it? To get people, you know, through whatever is going on. And of course, you know, with life, things take longer than 2 seconds. So I understand what you're saying. But it, you know, sometimes it takes a while. But again, usually, typically, with most people, you know, the intended results are reached. You know, they get to the point where, yes, okay, I gotta need to move on with life, and I'm ready to do that. Okay, 2 minutes. Okay. And that's what we want to do. That's what we need to do for one another, because, you know, God gave us one another to help one another, right? Right? And certainly the Bible tells us over and over again we are to encourage one another, right? We are to weep with those who weep and mourn with those who mourn, rejoice with those who rejoice. You know, all of those kind of things. Those are all emotional things that we are to share with one another when someone is going through some kind of struggle in their life. Okay? So the problem is not in having pity parties. The problem is not in having to face adversity and having to struggle through it. The problem is that sometimes the treatment causes more harm than good. Lots of hugs, lots of love, lots of encouragement.
Don't you understand?
Yeah, you share, you serve a listening ear and time, and you know all of those. Sometimes it's money and food, and you know it's whatever the person, you know, feels like that they need. I pity you, Betty. I couldn't help that one. Anyway.
Russ, it's more than anything to give your attention.
Yeah. And you give them lots of attention. You know. But, you know, here's the problem. See? Sometimes the treatment feels so good that we want to just keep coming back for more. Okay? See? And then we get addicted to the kindness and the warmth and the love. And as Brother Lynn Anderson puts it, we become pity junkies. Where we become dependent upon those things. And then what happens from there is that our helpers become enablers. As we thrive on attention and compassion from other people, it just kind of builds on itself. We find ourselves at the very best looking for comfort and then delegating our recovery on to others, or at worst, copping out of responsibility and blaming others for our situation. That's oftentimes exactly what happens. I can't do this. I need help. I can't take care of myself. I can't handle this. Somebody else has to do it for me. And then on the other side of it is, it's not my fault. I'm in this situation. If so-and-so hadn't done this, or if so-and-so would do this, then I wouldn't be where I am. Lose sight of the personal responsibility for where we are and find all kinds of other people or entities to put blame on. See? Our conversations then begin to focus on ourselves and how miserable we are. Blame anyone and everyone and anything but ourselves and become masters at reciting our problems. You ever met anybody like that? You right? Yeah. Let's see where that comes from. And in a sense, and you know, you just kind of picture, and as I'm sharing these thoughts with you, I want you to just try to picture in your mind the situation there at the pool, and we're going to talk about that more in just a moment. The situation there at the pool, and just kind of picture in your mind the person who's kind of going along this path, holding out the tin cup, begging for a listening ear, for anybody that would pass by and stop and give some attention. And by the way, medical doctors today are really, really quick to give us prescriptions to help out with the accompanying depression that goes along with all of this. You see, all you have to do is go to the doctor and say, well, I'm just feeling kind of down and blue. Oh, well, here, take this medicine and you'll feel better. The question becomes, from a Jesus perspective, how do we help those people who want to stay helpless? Okay? How do we help those people who want to stay helpless? And the reality is that it is extremely difficult, if not impossible, to really do. Okay? And so sometimes when you're dealing with someone that is kind of locked into that helpless mode and they don't really see any need to get, you know, even though they will say, well, I don't want to be like this, but they really do. You know, it's like trying to swim upstream. You know? It becomes a very, very difficult task. It's also not only difficult, if not impossible, but it's also risky. Why do you suppose it would be risky to help people like that?
Their life is always being
and that's where he is. But what about you in your situation? What about the people that are trying to help that person? Why is it risky for them?
You've become part of the problem.
Yeah, it's easy to become, in a sense, get sucked into a codependent relationship, so to speak. Not only that, but you can then become the target of a lot of blame. Because why? Because you're not. Guys have had a lot of experience. Well, and I think overall that's really the general major problem, is their focus is not on God, it's on themselves, you know, and what their problem is and so forth, and then their solution to the problem is not a God solution, it's a you solution. And so God really isn't in the picture very much at all, except just kind of mentioning, you know, on the side, so to speak.
Well, what I was going to say is, too, it usually don't begin and end with this one problem. If you keep being the solution, it goes from one problem to the next, to the next, to the next. Right. And it's a never-ending, you know.
And that's what I was going to say here. The next thing here is you may just get tired, just get worn out of the unending recital of personal misfortune and tragedies. It never ends. As soon as you figure you've solved one problem, then here comes two or three more. And so where does it ever end? You just get emotionally and physically drained.
get your mind straight. But, you know, they claim that, you know, they believe in God, you know, that they know that God is there, but then they're always on you. And when they see that you're happy, you know, why are you happy and I'm not happy? You know, so, I mean, it's just draining, so I got to go.
Okay.
I got to go for a while.
You have to have
I'm really glad that so many of you have experienced, you know, this kind of thing, because, you know, I think this is a lesson that all of us really need to learn something from. Okay? Let me ask you this. Why is it so difficult for church people to deal with folks like this? Why do we have such a struggle with that?
I believe it's because, like, some people I've dealt with in the world, they're like, you're a Christian, you're supposed to do this.
Guilt trip, you know,
yeah.
What's all about? We feel guilty because we're not doing something. We feel like we have to do something to help this person, otherwise I'm not being a good Christian. And certainly, if it comes to that particular point, that person or persons don't mind reminding us of that, do they? You see? But there's that thing is, you know, I got to do something, but I just feel like I'm stuck and it's not getting anywhere and it's wearing me out and I'm not sure if I'm doing any good. I'm not sure if I'm doing more harm than good. I've been there before.
I told you earlier, I just never thought that would find myself. I feel God when I feel, because the Lord is with me, you know. In spite of my situation, it always can be worse. I'm not laying flat on my bed and somebody got to physically lift me, and I still can do a number of things.
Do what you can.
And, you know, I know it's hard on my wife a lot, you know, and I think my brother's there to help out, but I mean, it's inside me, Shelly. And I don't call it too much. It's just not in my makeup. I just can't.
How do you know that? He didn't even know what a pity party was. Song to yourself and 2 minutes you're on your way. Okay. Part of what we're going to be looking at through this whole thing. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say is...
What of my delays come in? But at some point, I think what are we going to do when we know we're being played? And it comes to time to tell you, when someone becomes dependent on you or you're giving to them, that's your, you do have a right to say something. Yeah. An obligation is Christian. It's a conversation. Yeah. And how are you going to do that? And when is the proper time to do that? And you try to do something.
Put
that time and those words, how to do it, and season it.
Right.
Oh, so much you need to know. For that time to be prepared.
Like you said, Russ, when you see that they're doing what they can, that's the difference to me. As long as they're doing what they can, and you see a progression, or you're pursuing all those things, I don't think it's going to help. It's that push when they start progressing and you start to see that.
Right. Okay.
Well, that's basically kind of what I wanted to say. Plus, those who are grounded and rooted in God, they may have these occasional things, but they have the strength to carry on. And most of the time, people that stay in this pity thing, they don't have that security. They don't have this source of strength to tap into. And that's why I think they remain where they are sometimes. They want this emotional security and they can't get it nowhere else. And we do, I agree with Tammy, when it gets to be too much, we need to learn to step back. And that's a hard lesson you and me are learning right now, is to step back and to say, you know, you need to start helping yourself. You can't rely on us to do this. You need to start helping yourself.
Like this, this topic is one that's really touched the heart of a lot of people. Y'all been there.
Yeah.
But you know, you look at this story of the healing at the pool, and you know, a lot of you in your Bible, depending on what kind of what version you have, whatever, has different topics, different sections, or what have you. And for a lot of them, that's what's the title of this section, is the healing at the pool. And I think typically when people study this particular miracle of Jesus, that's what the focus is all about, is the miracle that Jesus healed this man. And the emphasis is all about, you know, here's a man who's been lame for 38 years, and Jesus comes in, tells him to pick up his mat and to go, and he does, and he's healed instantly. And of course, and usually the discussion goes along the line of, you know, the religious leaders who are upset because Jesus did this on the Sabbath and healed this man and he's carrying his mat and he shouldn't be doing. We get into all these, you know, theological discussions over, you know, the healing part and the carrying the mat and so on and so forth. But I want to suggest to you a different approach. You guys, you know, you sound experienced in dealing with this kind of a problem. You have a lot of different suggestions as to what we should do and how we should handle these things. But this story really is a lesson from Jesus, the Master, in how to help people who are in prison by self-pity. And that's really what this is all about. There are some things that we can learn from Jesus, say, if we will pay attention to what he says and does here, what his approach is, just like, you know, his approach with Nicodemus, and just like his approach with the woman at the well, and just like his approach with the problem at the wedding feast at Cana, all of which we've looked at, different situations, every one of them, different needs, different felt needs, as we've talked about a lot, and different real needs. Okay? And how did Jesus deal with this person? And what can we learn from him? You see, Jesus is going to show us how he used those four principles that we've been talking about throughout this study when dealing with people of this nature. Just as a reminder to you, those four principles. The first one, to be available. Okay? In other words, to be where people are. Right? The second one is to be sensitive to people. Okay? The third one is to be helpful to people. And the fourth one is to be creative. Each person, as we've noted, is different, and their situation is different. Okay? But one of the things that we have to remember is that no matter what the situation is, each person is valuable. We can never lose sight of that. Each person is valuable, and each one matters to God. And because they matter to God, they should matter to us. Okay? So I want to encourage you, as we look at this story, let's notice, how does Jesus handle this situation? Okay? And keeping those four principles in mind, how does he handle this whole thing? Huh?
I'm not answering your question, but I think I'm asking another question.
Okay.
I would give four principles, and I've heard the responses. What about the person on the other end? Because a lot of us have been that person on the other end, and I feel like I'm really a person on that other end of this congregation. So, are you available? I'm sorry, I can't remember the name. But the four principles. So, at what point, the next mentioned on it, do you have to know that that person is going to be ready? Or not even ready, but that they're listening. She said, when they talk to their sister, she was disconnected. So you're going with the four principles. But maybe you got this answer later. When it's the person on the other end, because almost every family in here has been available to me, has been they made availability, and I have to go back to Peggy Redd, because she, you know, I can remember the day 20 years ago when she came to my house to pray with, and her and Ms. Southall would rotate on Saturdays to sit with the kids for one of them to teach their lesson. And but they saw that I was willing. So when do you, I'm sorry,
well, we're going to answer those questions, because that's what this lesson is all about. We're going to look and see, how did Jesus apply these principles? And I think that probably what you're going to see is, at least to a certain extent, not in the way that you might typically think. Okay? For instance, we've got a few minutes to begin talking about at least the first one, being available, being where people are. Look at the first four verses of chapter 5 here in this story. Okay? And in those first four verses, we're kind of introduced to where this event is taking place. It is there at the pool of Bethsaida. Okay? Which, interestingly enough, means, that word means house of mercy. Okay? House of mercy. And the description here tells us that this pool was there near the sheep gate, and it's surrounded by five covered colonnades, or walkways, if you will. Okay? But notice what it says as the scene begins to be painted for us. How does it describe who's there? A great number of disabled people used to lie there. The blind, the lame, the paralyzed. Just, if you have to close your eyes for a moment and just try to picture in your mind that scene. That in this area, around this pool, there are a lot of people who have problems. People who are paralyzed, people that are lame, people that are blind, people that have all kinds of physical illnesses and diseases and problems. All over. I think that sometimes when we read this story, it's real easy to kind of lose sight, and that's why I want you to try to picture the scene here, because all of the attention gets focused on this one person, you see? I mean, this verse just kind of gets mentioned in passing. You know, there's all these people here, and then there's all the rest of the stories about this one person, so it's really easy to kind of read this story and just think that it's all about this one person here. That Jesus walked into the colonnade and there was this man sitting there by himself and he's been paralyzed for 38 years and the truth couldn't be further away from that. The fact of the matter is that the place was full. It was full of people. They had all kinds of problems. Bodies everywhere. People moaning, groaning. Perhaps maybe the stench of wounds and bodies that need to be cared for.
Said, you know, we all got problems, but lay your burdens down there. Well, what it is, we lay it down, and then we pick it up, because the fact we were answered quick enough. And then also, we know that Jesus never begged anyone to come to him. Has he ever begged? We beg people to come to church. We beg. But as long as you present the word the way it should be presented, they will come. Why do we have to compromise God's word, and we should never compromise his word to bring people into the house? God never told us that. He said, just do what I tell you to. And he knows our heart anyway. See, we see the outside, because we, you know, we don't know your heart. But we could perpetrate a lot of things. It's like, I even think about, like, my husband. My husband been in the church, I mean, I've been in there longer than him. But, you know, I mean, but he is a person that will drain you. Physically, he drains you. And that's why I have to leave and go and spend time with my mother or go to other parts, because otherwise I would lose it. And what I try to do with my husband is I try to share the word with him, and we'll read and everything, and then he'll start questioning me. And I'm saying, but where is your faith? Where is your faith? You cannot depend on my faith. You have to have your own faith.
Well, and I think that hopefully from the things that we're going to be studying and learning from how Jesus was with this, and things that may help me in dealing with that situation in a much better way for you and for the pastor.
Go ahead. I was just going to say this quickly. I heard a brother, a real weird kid one time, he was doing a lesson, and he said, you know, Peter preached one sermon and baptized 2,000. Now he got to preach 3,000 sermons. He got that. And it's really sad. People just don't have any interest. Many people don't have any interest in the very thing that they really need. That's the soul that they have. You're going to have to give an answer for it.
That's indeed.
And if you don't give an answer for it, here's a place for it. I've been disappointed in my lifetime missing the book in remembering my family. It's so sad.
Well, we're out of time here. Let me just want you to maybe prepare you for next week as we go through this. Paint that mental picture in your mind of this scene that Jesus walks into. Lynn Anderson calls it this. He says it's a scrap heap of broken down people. Right? And then he says the fact that Jesus was at this pool is noteworthy. He was where hurting people were. He was available to people. Yeah. I want you to just kind of take that with you, and we'll pick up here next week. All right. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.